Good. I'm listening, Strasser. You scarred me, Ryan. Ruined years of work and planning. Stole things I wanted. Not many men do that. I don't have a single enemy, Ryan, but for you. Not one.
No enemy, Strasser? Not one?
Alive, Ryan. Don't see anything else, smartass, or I'll chill you now. Come in with me and take a half share for you and the other three. Persuade them to join me and ride with me.
If he'd had any doubts before, Ryan knew then that Court Strasser was sublimely, totally insane. Mad beyond the craziness of any ordinary lunatic, his dreams of conquest had tipped over the abyss, what little sanity had remained. But the knowledge offered a peephole of light for Ryan, if he stepped cautiously, like a man walking on explosive eggs.
I'm listening to you, Strasser.
Well, then come around Fort Security with me, Ryan, and we can talk some more.
Ah! Oh, shit.
Jack's ribs were on fire. The jolting of the nimble little pinto pony had undone much of the shaman's good work. Every time he tried for a deep breath, jagged pain lanced through his body. It felt as if someone was rubbing the ends of two broken bottles together inside his chest. Twice he'd had to dismount to vomit. The second time, the horse nearly broke away from him, but he just managed to hang on to the bridle. Flurries of wind kept swirling around him, bringing a pillar of red-gray dust that made him cough. He had borrowed a cotton kerchief from one of the warriors, which he knotted over his mouth and nose. As he rode slowly along, following the detailed instructions of Kuchio Oro, the boy found that his mind kept turning to Steps Lightly Moon and the pleasure she had given him. The memory cheered Jack.
Yeah!
He kicked his pony's flanks, moving toward the fort with a renewed sense of purpose. Strasser didn't take any chances. Despite his protestations that he wanted Ryan to become his friend, he kept him securely cuffed, both at ankles and wrists. Coming out of the dim light of the prison block, Ryan blinked in the dazzling sunlight. The flagpole carried the fluttering pennon of the 7th Cavalry. It was a truly amazing sight. If he hadn't known better, Ryan could easily have been convinced that a cron jump had been made successfully, and that he was back in the late 1800s. Only the dune wag and Strasser's Russian blaster gave the game away.
Bastards like these would have ruined everything. If I hadn't come along and showed them the right way, they'd probably have burned down the redoubt in the museum by now and gotten themselves chilled over some Mescalero torture fire in the bargain. I showed them different.
Ryan noticed a large blaster set between two cartwheels. It seemed to have several barrels.
What's that?
Gatling gun. General Custer had one when he went up into the Black Hills of Dakota, the sacred lands of the Sioux. Didn't do him a lot of good. It's like a machine gun. Got too hot and jammed a lot. That looks good for show.
As he glanced around the fortified building, Ryan felt the sullen swell of despair. Even if by some miracle he avoided being chilled by Strasser, he didn't see any hope of the undisciplined Apaches being able to defeat the Sekmen. Fort Security was too powerful, and the general too shrewd. Unless they could somehow be lured out from behind the thick walls into the neutral killing ground of the desert. Jack saw the mounted patrol before it saw him. He'd stopped among a jumble of rounded orange boulders to take a couple of mouthfuls of precious water from the canteen and eat a strip of jerked meat. During the rising heat of the morning, the boy had seen innumerable dust devils, whirling clouds of wind-borne sand that danced across the land and collapsed in on themselves as suddenly as they'd appeared. But this column of dust was different, larger and higher, moving steadily toward him along a trail that Kuchio Oro had shown him on a rough map. A trail that Jack knew led to the fort. He didn't bother to get up and mount the horse again. At their present speed, he figured that the Sekmen would reach him in something under a half hour. He leaned back, shading his sensitive eyes against the sun, and waited.
Sergeant McLaughlin.
Yes, General.
The big, raw-faced non-com snapped off a cracking salute. Strasser's face creased in a genial smile, but it was a smile that failed totally to get anywhere near the arctic blue eyes.
Showing Mr. Cotter here around our home. It's possible that he might be joining us.
Is that so, General?
Do I hear a note of doubt, Sergeant?
Of course not, General. You order it, then be gone, but it's as though you wrote it on a marble tablet.
McLaughlin here was number two in a big sec unit for a vill out east. Folks come on a sailor from Europe, didn't they, Sergeant?
They did, General. Bad huts over there. Took them near 2 months in a leaky barrel.
McLaughlin had to leave his vill suddenly, didn't you, Sergeant?
Them bastards would have strung me up by the balls, General. You know why.
Tell Mr. Cotter.
Sure, and I wish you'd not make me, General.
Tell him.
Just that I had to punish a couple of men that stepped out of line. Didn't expect them to get chilled.
Ryan was only half listening, using the time to look around the place, trying to find a weakness. But there wasn't one. Court Strasser was too good at his chosen profession.
Go on, Sergeant.
I was about staking the bastards on some rocks by the sea. Well, I suppose they were more in the sea, you might say.
And they drowned.
Sergeant McLaughlin threw his head back, and in doing so showed a mouth filled with rotten teeth, sprinkled with a few aging plastents.
Sure, that's what they all think, isn't it, General? No, it wasn't the Atlantic got to him, though there was a mite wet and cold from it. I clean forgot there were some muted king crabs on that stretch of the coast. Clean forgot I had.
A picture flashed in Ryan's mind. When he was a young boy, he'd gone out on a hunting trip with his father, the Baron Titus, and his brothers, Morgan and Harvey. They'd gone in wags from the vill in the Shens, heading eastward until he reached the rolling gray waters of the Atlantic. For reasons that Ryan couldn't recall, he'd been left alone on a stretch of dismal shingle, while the others went off in search of something or other. And the crabs had come for him. If he closed his eye, Ryan could still see them, could hear the noise of the scaly shells as they skittered over the wet stones. There'd been a mist drifting in from the water, veiling both ends of the beach, leaving him utterly isolated and alone. The creatures looked as though they'd been around for all eternity, scuttling about the great feet of the meat-eating dinosaurs at the time that rocks melted and the ocean steamed. Their spiked tails left furrows in the pebbles, and they were moving toward Ryan as fast as a walking man. The nearest of them was 4 feet across the top of the carapace, 7 feet to the tip of its tail. But it was followed by a muty monster, fully 15 feet across, and nearly 30 feet to the end of the menacing tail.
Help! Help!
Ryan's voice had vanished in the fog, swallowed by the endless tumbling of the breakers. He'd run, his little legs scampering, slipping and falling in the treacherous hollows of the long beach. All he'd had to defend himself with was a dagger, a pretty toy with a maroon hilt, taped with a light blue ribbon. The blade was no longer than 6 inches. The safety of some low cliffs, easily climbed, beckoned to the young boy, but the huge leader of the king crabs was closing on him, so near he could hear the harsh sound of its breathing. If he'd fallen then, the creature would have overwhelmed him. Only yards from safety, the young boy had turned, tiny knife in his chubby fist. He watched the approach of the nightmare horror, his feet planted apart for balance, falling by some primitive instinct into the classic knife fighter's crouch, knife held point up. The thing was on him, hardly hesitating, seeing no threat in its puny opponent. Instead of backing away, Ryan dove in, jumping over the top of the thing, cutting down at the boggling eye. Desperately wounded and half-blind, the crab shuddered to a stop, seeking its prey. But Ryan was quicker. Dancing around it, he stabbed through the other eye, feeling its clammy ichor spurting over his fingers and wrist, clear to the elbow. The boy had escaped easily after that, watching while the other crabs turned on the helpless giant and devoured it. The memory was so powerful that Ryan almost forgot where he was. Strasser's voice tugged him back into the present.
And the crabs began at their feet and worked their way up, did they not, Sergeant?
Indeed they did, General. One of the bastards had his head, chest, and left arm remain. The other was just a head, rolling around in the surf like a large pink rock.
Strasser smiled indulgently, as though one of his pet hounds had just performed a clever trick.
Seems like he don't think it's funny, General. Maybe he's not the man for the seventh. Maybe he ought to prove to us that he's not just a one-eyed piece of spare baggage.
Ryan had been challenged often enough in his life to know that this wasn't a joke anymore. And he knew enough about Court Strasser to feel confident that this had all been engineered.
Sergeant's right, Ryan. New men here might have to face up to a challenge. Who do you suggest, Sergeant?
Well, Trooper Rourke's gentle as a newborn lamb, General. Maybe Mr. Cotter might care to cross with him, do you think?
Ryan saw the logic behind the madness. If he beat the Sec man, who he guessed was the best they had at hand-to-hand, then it would establish him if he accepted Strasser's offer. If he lost, then a good beating would give some pleasure to Strasser.
Do I get to take the chains off?
Of course. All fair and above board, isn't it, Sergeant?
Oh, certes, General. Why, I believe that's Trooper Rourke over there. We should settle this real soon.
Yeah. Why don't we do the show right here and now?
Ryan recognized the Sec man. Rourke was the tall, scar-faced thug, 3 inches over 6 feet, and 20 pounds over the 300 mark.
Call Rourke, Sergeant.
A shout from the main guard post on the tower at the side of the entrance gate stopped him.
Patrol coming in!
They shouldn't be in until tonight.
Got a prisoner!
Looks like we better wait for the mall, Ryan. I could be busy. Sergeant McLaughlin here can show you around the 7th Cavalry Museum, over by the lip of that mesa.
The massive gate swung slowly open, and Ryan watched the line of horsemen canter in. At their center, on a small pinto pony, was the unmistakable figure of Jack Lauren.
Fireblast.
The rancheria was quiet. Nearly all the Apaches stayed in their wiki-ups. Everyone knew that the one-eyed Anglo had been taken by Yellowhair, and that young Eyes of Wolf had offered himself as a sacrifice to try to get into the fortress of the pony soldiers. There was nothing to do now but sit and wait. Cuchillo Oro had sent out a half dozen of his young warriors to keep watch from a long, flat butte overlooking the desert that ran toward the fort. If anything happened, they'd gallop to the rancheria and report it. Or if Jack or Ryan, or both, made a break for it, they might be able to help with covering fire. But nobody expected anything to happen until the next day. Maybe the day after that. And maybe never. J.B. had retired to strip and clean his arsenal, complaining that the fine dust of New Mexico was ruining the delicate mechanism of his blasters. Christie had left the fires to go sit near the pool under the scarred cliffs. Since Ryan had been captured, she'd said very little, seeming locked into her own private fears. Doc and Lori remained outside in the evening warmth, the girl leaning against the old man for comfort. Doc didn't eat much of the chili and bean stew, complaining that it gave him gas. But Lori had polished off his bowl as well as her own, asking for seconds. As Doc sat, awkwardly cross-legged, by the dying embers of a cooking fire, there was a movement in the gray shadows, and Steps Lightly Moon came shyly to join them.
You look worried, my dear. That can be an exhaustive pastime, especially with the likes of this group. Men like Ryan Corder live close to the edge. They pass their lives dancing with the Widowmaker, flirting with the old bitch. Then they break free of her embrace before she sets her teeth into their throats. Young Jack's the same breed. So's John Barrymore Dix. I would guess Christy Roth comes from the same breed. But not I. Not Laurie. Ah, me. But I shouldn't go on like that, little girl. By the three Kennedys, but this waiting is irksome, isn't it? You wouldn't have anything that I could ease my dry throat with, would you, my dear lady? I'd be obliged.
Steps Lightly Moon rose with the ease of a young fawn, reappearing with an earthenware mug and 3 beakers. She poured out refreshing draughts of the juice of the mesquite bean. For several long seconds they sat in silence, until the Mescalero girl spoke.
Will Eyes of Wolf survive?
Of course he will.
My heart is his heart. He's real young. Much youngest for you.
And you aren't too youngest? I mean, young for me, my honey bear?
That'd be different, you old galoot.
Galoot? I didn't teach you that, did I? Upon my soul, I fear that I did. There can hardly be a living soul in all Deathlands that would use such a word.
My father tells me you have traveled far. He says that after this, if it has been a good day for the pony soldiers to visit the shadowlands of their ancestors, my father says that you will all move on from here. All of you?
There are 2 kinds of folk, Steps Lightly Moon. There's the kind like a flower, or like one of those big cactus plants. And there are those like the wind. I think you know what kind of a person Jack Lauren is.
Yes, I know. But there is time, and there is hope, is there not?
Child, there's always hope.
The sight of the young albino boy riding in the middle of the cavalry patrol